Turning in God's words to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 16, and we shall read from verse 13 to verse 27. Matthew chapter 16, from verse 13 to verse 27. When Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" So they said, "Some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, and others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered and said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said to him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he commanded his disciples that they should tell no one that he was Jesus the Christ. From that time, Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and be raised the third day. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan, you are an offence to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will reward each according to his works." And that is the word of God. What a great calling we have under God to build biblical churches. While others despise the local church or seek to reinvent it, we cherish it. How precious she is. That distinct, separate community with Christ as head. The Lord promised he would build his church. He also said that the gates of hell would not prevail against it. The gates of hell? From our Lord's words, we learn that this wonderful enterprise attracts the interest of the devil and of all the hosts of hell. Success is ultimately assured. We have our Saviour's promise. But while his statement assures us of his ultimate victory over the devil, it alerts us to the evil one's untiring efforts to prevail over the Lord's people. One of our challenges today, as pastors, elders, deacons, Sunday school workers, helpers among the young and members of churches, is how to build biblical churches in a society much taken up with entertainment. Today, so much is judged by whether it is fun or whether, loosely speaking, it produces pleasure and happiness. Teachers, politicians, economists, and preachers are meant to make us happy, to make us feel good about ourselves, and to help us achieve personal fulfillment. So firstly this morning, I want to try to pin down what we mean by entertainment and the entertainment society. What influences are at work? What is the wider context in which they operate? Secondly, actually more briefly, we will list some of the obvious ways the entertainment society is in the church. Thirdly, We'll look at how the entertainment society more insidiously may dwell in our hearts undetected. We'll look at how to meet that challenge and repent. We will look from various vantage points as to how we can, under God, build churches that are progressively being freed from the effects of the entertainment society. What guidelines are there? What warnings do we need to issue? As ever, we struggle to understand our present age when we are in part children of that age. Pastors and elders, Sunday school teachers and servants of Christ in the local church, we're always seeking God's help to understand our own wicked hearts better and change our thinking and behaviour in the light of our discoveries. Whatever responsibilities we exercise in the church, we all need to be vigilant about what we permit in our thinking, in our conversation, in our preaching, and in our leisure time. The high calling of sanctification and the flight from worldliness must be the backdrop against which we consider the entertainment society. Biblical churches are holy churches. They are Christ-centered churches. To the extent that the entertainment society weakens sanctification, to that extent it must be critiqued and avoid it. But borrowing from the world of entertainment, relax. I'm not advocating that the skip appear outside your house Monday morning prompt to cart off your electronic gadgetry, Blu-ray players, iPods, MP3s, high-definition TVs, camcorders, and everything else. Do not cut up your Costa's coffee shop reward card, but let it continue to earn you points towards that free cappuccino or latte. I give myself away, don't I? Do not rush out and cancel your membership of some esoteric interest group or sports club, nor think that the young people's trip 10-pin bowling or the gales of laughter that accompanied the church outing will be, by the end of this hour, guilty secrets we dare not mention again. The Lord's people are not forbidden to experience this world, enjoy each other's company. Let there be entertainment of the right kind, with the right people, with the right emphases, at the right time, and with the right objectives. We'll return to that later. So firstly then, what is the entertainment society? What is the entertainment society? Well, actually, let us take one step further back and ask the question, what is entertainment? Well, by entertainment, I mean things and experiences we consume that are designed to give us pleasure and through which we seek some emotional fulfillment. The emphasis is mostly on us being passive recipients of enjoyable experiences. So, in seeking to be entertained, we classically rely on the efforts of others, be they physically present or absent, or to technologies to stimulate us primarily in an emotional way. Thus, entertainment has less to do with the deliberate cultivation of intellectual effort or the stimulation of reflective thought, although these things are not entirely absent. By entertainment society, we mean a society where the demand for and supply of these emotional recreations occupies a place of great prominence in how people spend their time and money, and what their goals and expectations are. Of course, entertainments there have always been. Spectator sports predate the world of television. The death of noble martyrs in the Colosseum was a form of entertainment to some. Hare-coursing, cockfighting, storytelling, and gatherings to hear music were in existence before Sky Sports, MTV, pop concerts, or Manchester United, or Liverpool.
or any other club,
I quickly add. Yet, with the exception of some of the moneyed elites, options for entertainment were limited. For most people, the struggle to make a living meant that leisure opportunities were few. Not so in the West today. Opportunities for entertainment have grown incredibly, with increase in leisure time, won in part through employee gains in the workplace, and also, we might add, through such trends as the decline in Sunday observance. Greater affluence has permitted entertainment to occupy a more central role in national life and wider culture. Then there is the invention of the television, personal computer, and the internet, which are the prominent tips of a large iceberg of increasingly affordable technologies. To the list, we might add the development of youth culture, oriented often around pop music, and whose effects live on into adulthood and old age. So now, we can justifiably speak about the entertainment society in a way that we could not speak of in former generations. Topically, perhaps, we might also say that neither are people who are unemployed or feeling the effects of the recession denied access to the world of the entertainment society. Sky Sports, DVD watching and video games are still within reach. So even with the worst effects of the recession perhaps still to come, being unemployed does not automatically exclude people from the entertainment society, and arguably may actually take people further into it. The notion of personal fulfillment and emotional satisfaction found at the heart of the entertainment society also spills over into other more active recreations or more overtly intellectual pursuits and pastimes. These too have received a boost with the general rise in affluence and with the extra time freed up from, for example, domestic routines. These more active and sometimes energetic pursuits include holidays, sports, including extreme sports, esoteric interests and membership of clubs and societies. Yet these pursuits can also work in a way that is similar to entertainment. For even with more creative, more explicitly goal-setting and perhaps intellectual pursuits, the idea of personal fulfillment and maximising emotional satisfaction is never far away. These more active and purposive pastimes join up with the entertainment society by sharing in the expectation that we should have deep emotional experiences, be stretched and developed as emotional beings, and achieve a steady state of happiness. Nor need the meaning of happiness or pleasure be confined to that which makes us laugh or amuses us. Fun comes in many packages, including experiences and events that generate fear, suspense, horror, or feelings of empowerment. Happiness may include being made to weep, or being shocked, or outraged. What is important in the entertainment society, or its more active twin, the recreation society, is that we feel something. Alongside the consumers of the entertainment society, aiding and abetting in this pursuit of self-gratification, fulfillment, and happiness is the entertainment industry, often destroying in the process moral boundaries and standards of decency and taste. It employs millions and has a turnover running into billions. Film stars, football players, X Factor contestants, and inmates of the Big Brother house, they are all vital elements of the entertainment society. Government, too, plays its part, regulating where it will, intervening where it must, but largely supportive of the aspirations and expectations both of the consumers and the producers of the entertainment society. Whether it be legislating in favour of 24-hour drinking, the creation of super casinos, the licensing of the National Lottery, the free provision of morning after pills, the permitting of lap dancing clubs, the downgrading or upgrading of cannabis. The state plays a huge role in supporting the entertainment, recreation, society, and receives huge tax receipts from it in return. With government backing, entertainers of whatever stamp have hurried to offer us the entertainments and recreations we apparently demand, and then seek to exceed our expectations, and so create new demands. They compete to deepen our experiences and keep boredom away from our door. Indeed, it goes further. Permeating the entertainment society is a sense of entitlement to personal happiness and enriching emotional experiences. People feel they are positively owed leisure time and happiness. By government, by employers, by their families, by God, by everyone. Employers fall over themselves to offer the best holiday and perks packages so as to attract the best employees. Even in some church circles, pastors come with a list of demands largely related to leisure and personal comfort. Husbands, wives, and partners forsake their families to find the emotional riches they feel entitled to, leaving broken relationships and children with wrecked prospects in their wake. This analysis has, of course, to be nuanced. There are microcultures, especially in our cities and some of our towns, inhabited by people, maybe, who have migrated from overseas, for whom leisure time is a myth, as they work long hours on the minimum wage. Islamic cultures may react strongly against elements of the entertainment society and adopt dress codes, child-rearing methods, and career choices which run totally counter to it. But even if we can accept there will be exceptions to the rule, I think we can recognise that today in the United Kingdom, we live in what we can justifiably call an entertainment society. If we can trace economic and technological changes that have helped produce the entertainment society, are there any particular intellectual movements that have helped produce it? Well, at the risk of gross simplification, we can perhaps find a privileging of the emotional life arising in the Romanticism of the 19th century. The Romantics sided firmly on the side of feelings. In her recently published book, The World Turned Upside Down, the journalist Melanie Phillips comments, let me quote her, "The influence," she says, "of Romanticism on all subsequent thinking cannot be overestimated. A deeply complex movement of thought, it gave rise to a tremendous flowering of German cultural and intellectual life. And yet, as the 19th century wore on, it also resulted in the submerging of reason by emotion." That's the main thesis of her book. And though she be not a Christian, it is a most interesting read. She won't agree with all of it, and I don't, but there are some fascinating insights that she has. In Germany, this had its own unique twist, including the celebration of myths, a mystical belief in a people having a connection to a particular land, and paradoxically, the belief that the state could liberate us to achieve these aims. Nazism owed a considerable debt to this particular German brand of romanticism. More importantly, for our story here in the UK, the German radical Friedrich Nietzsche exerted a push away from reason and towards what he called, and away from what he called rather, the slave morality of Judeo-Christian principles, towards the elevation of the irrational and the instinctive. Melanie Phillips again comments, and I quote her, "As the supreme prophet of nihilism, Nietzsche is today much in vogue among left-wing opponents of Judeo-Christian slave morality. And the destruction of objectivity and the veneration of instinct and emotions at the heart of Romanticism constitute the governing creed for contemporary Western progressives." By Western progressives, broadly speaking, she means the people who run the country today. Just from this superficial overview, we can see that the intellectual moorings of the entertainment society do not have God at their heart. On the contrary, they have had man and his search for pleasure as their driving force. And it is in this context that we are looking to build biblical churches. So next, secondly, the entertainment society in today's church. Well, the influence of the entertainment society in the wider evangelical church is widespread. I'm not going to linger long in trying to prove that point. Its more overt effects are everywhere and gaining traction in places we might not have expected. Fun, relaxation, excitement and promises of personal fulfillment and emotional wholeness are everywhere on offer. Robert Schuller's Gospel of Self-Esteem invites you to join him on a journey to emotional well-being and happiness. The materialistic message of the health and wealth gospel bullies you into accepting a life of guilt-free riches and success. There are the high-quality bands of Hillsong, offering the best in worship music and setting the benchmark for exhilarating performances. There are the preachers, who, whatever they are preaching, pack their addresses with hilarious anecdotes and spine-tingling passion. There are the churches where the donkey is brought in on Palm Sunday. Not to mention the acrobats who swoop down to add point and emphasis to the preacher's sermon. In other places, there is kickboxing to grab our attention, or else the awesome spectacle of a prophetess, her head shaking from side to side. She utters exciting prophecies of revival and equally awe-inspiring denunciations of those who decline to be part of the new move of the Spirit. Clowns make their entrance stage rites in some places of worship, while elsewhere a more serious drama group attempts to hold the audience spellbound. Beer is on tap at the church down the road, while online poker is the evangelistic tool beloved of some. The big screen is brought in when England's World Cup football match coincides with the Sunday night service. Service is cancelled. The Bible is given a makeover in rap style to ensure that boredom levels do not rise or inattention creep over our minds. Aching and stressful lives can find emotional wholeness as they meditate on a candle or do breath prayers in a quiet room perfumed with pleasant fragrances. The purpose-driven and seeker-sensitive philosophy deliberately sets out to offer a good experience to the worshipper and make them feel relaxed and comfortable through good music, good storytelling, good drama, and good food. And so the list goes on. You can fill in the gaps of churches, ministries, and parachurch groups that have amazed and shocked you through their selling out overtly to the entertainment society. But one does not only have to reach for the most crass and obvious compromises to see the effects of the entertainment society more widely. Gary Gilley, commentator, Christian perspective on culture and its effects on the church, says this: "One would hope that things will be different among evangelical Christians, but such does not seem to be the case. It appears that the church is in lockstep with the world. The problem is this: Christians have been seduced and trained by the same forces that have enticed society as a whole. Too many Christians, just like their unsaved counterparts, are impressed by appearances rather than structure, are seeking thrills and excitement rather than substance, are more apt to respond to emotional manipulation than to rational discourse." The end of the quote. We may have kept the worst examples out of our churches, but do the goals and aspirations of the entertainment society still lurk somewhere in my heart and yours? Am I subtly controlled by its agenda, values, and preferences? We need then to dig a little deeper into our own souls and not feel we are clear of this more obvious compromise because we do not have the power weightlifters in our Sunday services. So let's move on to consider some principles and guidelines to shape our work and service as local churches. So my third heading, and where we're going to dwell the longest: building biblical churches. Well, firstly, positive aspects. Positive aspects. We should not think that everything connected with entertainment culture is unremittingly bad. I'm not advocating an Amish-like repudiation of all modern innovations or developments since, say, the 18th century. There are immense opportunities, as David has helpfully shown us, in internet and Facebook to present to us as churches, as Christians, if rightly used. Meetings can be advertised, sermons can be downloaded or watched online. I know a group of people who shared their concerns on the internet about the unbiblical practices in the churches they were attending. Arising from this conversation, they were able to find a sound gospel church, and now their questions are being directed to the pastor and the elders of that church. Skills honed perhaps through acquaintance with some entertainment-based computer applications can be used in the design of church websites and in the presentation of material in different media and formats. Likewise, people involved in the world of radio and television can sometimes give humbling lessons to us who are preachers about effective communication. It is true, their skills may be harnessed to a false and ungodly agenda, and at times be completely put on and fake. But we, who are preachers and teachers, see no virtue in being boring. Sometimes the better parts of Radio 4, for example, can supply us with good examples of speaking and holding people's attention. We deplore the soundbite culture, with its dangers of oversimplification. But our aim to be searching and relevant, especially in applying the truth, can be aided by paying some attention to those who are effective speakers and communicators in their own spheres. Again, positive aspect. Don't run away from the entertainment society. We should not think either that we must shun everything that happens out there in entertainment society, and that separation means being deliberately ignorant of it. Some awareness in popular culture and its trends, which inevitably means some acquaintance with the world of entertainment, is valuable for understanding the preoccupations of unsaved people. This is of enormous help in evangelism. The parable of the rich fool portrays for us a thoroughly modern man, looking forward to his life of ease and entertainment. He was a fool, and that night his life was demanded of him. The Lord, in the parable of the sower, declared that the pleasures of life were one of the things making the word unfruitful. Luke 8, verse 14. The entertainment society is taken up with the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. 1 John chapter 2, verse 16. We do not need to know all the specifics of what unbelievers entertain themselves with, but to know something is important if we are going to craft searching applications and illustrations for adults and children alike. The better we are acquainted with men's hearts, the more we might accomplish in our own personal evangelistic work. Their entertainments may well have become their addictions, stealing time, money, and affection away from their families. Our questions can be more probing if we are at least familiar with the general contours of the entertainment society. Remember, too, that many people who may become our friends or be in the congregation where we are preaching are also shocked at the developments of the entertainment society and may themselves have personal experience of the harm it has caused. Many men and women are just as dismayed as you and I are at the ladette culture, with women having fun by being drunken, abusive and violent. Many men as well as women are just as dismayed as you and I are at the predatory and aggressive behaviour of alpha males depicted in the world of entertainment and in the world at large. I was recently reading something written by a feminist and could identify with her horror at how young and not so young women degrade themselves at the hands of men. We do not need to know the gory details, but we do need to know something of the generality of what people are doing with their money and their time. Indeed, one of the most helpful windows into the leisure world inhabited by some people today was supplied recently by John Humphreys of Today programme fame. Spending a night out one weekend with the police on the streets of Cardiff, He was shocked at what he saw and heard, especially at the behavior of the women. Again, we do not need to know the sordid details, but it is helpful to know something about how our friends and neighbors are entertaining themselves. When Paul preached in Athens, he showed he was familiar with the writers that the people of the Areopagus were reading. You may be aware today of the publicity surrounding a book by Elizabeth Gilbert entitled Eat, Pray, Love. It's received fresh impetus through being turned into a recently premiered film with Julia Roberts in the starring role. I would venture to suggest this captures something of a phenomenon with restless, middle-aged, professional and middle-class women cutting themselves loose to discover personal happiness, as they define it. Now, admittedly, it is more Primrose Hill than Warrington, but it does reflect an aspiration that appeals to some women in the UK. Now, we don't need to see the film, and I'd strongly advocate we do not. Neither do we need to read the book, and I would again strongly advocate we do not. But I'm interested in the discussion about it, in the papers and magazines. I'm interested in the non-Christians who describe how they follow this route. In the end, of course, despite the intellectual overlay, it exemplifies the sinner's flight from God and the vain search for satisfaction and fulfillment. We could also mention Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code, which was subsequently given the Hollywood treatment and made into a film. Again, you do not need to have read the book or seen the film, but it reflects a stream of contemporary and popular thought drawn from the world of entertainment and evidently dangerous and pervasive. People we meet in our personal witness may well have been influenced by it. People who come to our services may well have prejudices which have been fed by it. Some basic working knowledge of the entertainment society, I would argue, is indispensable in our evangelistic enterprise and in equipping the Lord's people, not only to guard their own hearts, but to make wisdom to be heard where folly is embedded. Building gospel churches requires us to be alert to these broader currents and trends. Being an entertainment society necessarily will mean that the world of entertainment will be the harbinger of some of the key developments shaping how people think, for example, about the Christian faith. Well, my next subheading is expelling the entertainment society from our souls. While in evangelism, we need to be attentive to the ideology of the entertainment society, it certainly is true that we also need to guard our souls. Which of the entertainment society's habits and attitudes have we imported without realizing it? What hostile elements to the biblical mind and biblical standards are we humoring through what we entertain ourselves with? Neither do I mean simply the more grossly sinful things like pornography, drunkenness, coarse speech, and flirtatious dressing depicted in the media. Living in an entertainment society, having been brought up in an entertainment society with its fixations and obsessions, even more innocent entertainments and pastimes can exercise an ungodly influence. The Lord's people can end up with lopsided priorities, surrounded as they are by family, neighbours, advertisers and professing Christians who are themselves dominated by entertainment. The temptation, knowingly or unknowingly, to prioritise entertainment above the Lord's work and worship is huge. It's a constant refrain that churches are unable to find people who will be committed. On closer inspection, we find they are committed, but it's to their leisure pursuits, recreations or more overt entertainments. They have time to spare, but they're spending it on themselves. Check the reasons we may give to our minister, perhaps, to declining to do some aspect of the Lord's work, or absenting ourselves from meetings in his house, especially on his day. Not everyone can get to every meeting. Work and family commitments can be valid reasons. Our heart may be there with the Lord's people, but God-given responsibilities actually mean we must be somewhere else. Well and good. But if we're absent from the gathering of his people, and it's actually some entertainment or recreation that is detaining us, dear friends, this will not do. How can we enjoy such me time or relaxation without a pang of conscience is testimony to the spiritually deadening effect of the entertainment society upon our soul. Let it not be true of any of us or any in our churches. Remember, the devil will always find ways of trying to hinder the Lord's people and interfere their fellowship with him and with each other. The entertainment society is one of the key strategies he employs today. Do you? Do I wish to know more of the Lord's presence? Do you long for more conscious communion with him? Listen to James 4, verse 3. You ask and do not receive, because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures. Is that you? Is that me? I pray to know him better and know his blessing. Yet in my heart, I'm more interested in using the money, time and good health he gives me for my own enjoyments, pleasures and fulfillment. We won't get the sought-for communion with him in that way until we're serious about grappling with the false priorities and flesh-pleasing agenda imposed by the entertainment society. We should not think the Lord will reveal the secret of his covenant to us. Do we realize this is so? Again, do we fully understand just how self-centered and self-absorbed we are as a result of our sinful natures? It is endemic in our souls. The entertainment society is actually a perilous time, as defined by the Apostle Paul, when men will be lovers of themselves, 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 4. The entertainment society plays to the endemic selfishness of our sinful hearts and reinforces it in us. We can be office bearers, busy people in our churches, wise at discerning doctrines, yet in our hearts be worldly. God is not at the centre of our affection and service, but actually we are. It's an embarrassing and uncomfortable issue to raise, and is not settled in an instant. The process of us decreasing while Christ increases is not the work of a moment. There is always some area of life needing our attention and the grace of God. The twisted self-centeredness, which is the legacy of sin, takes much dislodging in order to shift us from the center stage. Self-denial is not one of the strengths where hearts and minds are saturated with the entertainment society. The Lord said, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it." The self-denial part may sound daunting, but remember the promises the Lord makes. The gains are immeasurably greater than any losses. For where the entertainment society once dominated our horizon, now it is a clearer grasp of Christ's love and glory. Solid joys and lasting treasures none but Zion's children know. Those who've run the race with diligence will tell us his felt friendship is more valuable than the best the entertainment world can give us. You have put gladness in my heart more than in the season that their grain and wine increased. Psalm 4, verse 7. Because your loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise you. Psalm 63, verse 3. Self-denial leads to praise and gladness. Let that prospect spur us in our sanctification and the expulsion of the entertainment society from our hearts. My next subheading is this: thinking straight. Thinking straight. There are other aspects of the entertainment society where the effects can be subtle. Now, David quoted Neil Postman. Indeed, the late Neil Postman, who wrote the book Amusing Ourselves to Death, with his analysis of television, and how by virtue of the medium that it is, it has to present serious things such as the news in a way that is entertaining. His assertion was the medium of television actually changes the way we think, or rather makes us a generation of non-thinkers. We end up lacking the mental equipment to analyse arguments. weigh evidence and arrive at rational conclusions. We're more likely to be impressed by the emotional impact that something or someone makes on us. David Wells, in his masterly book, No Place for the Truth, would concur with this. He looks, admittedly from an American perspective, at the collapse of serious theology in the face of cultural forces unleashed by what he then would call modernity. Picking up the theme that people now look inwards to find meaning and purpose, rather than seeing an overarching purpose in God's truth, entertainment becomes that inner world, inducing feelings to help us become somebody and find meaning. Here is David Wells reflecting on the role of television, in part as seen through the eyes of other commentators. I quote him. Television images are fragmentary. They have what Donnelly has called a low intensity of definition. They're not linked organically with one another. What links do exist are formed in the viewer's feelings and imagination. For this reason, Jeremy Murray Brown speaks of television as a medium whose very nature repudiates the path of intellectual knowledge, because it uses drama rather than argument to deliver essentially emotional information. And the value of its product is measured less by its truthfulness than by its emotional impact. That's the end of that quote. It's an oft-heard lament that people are not reading so much today. We're more likely to find the TV, internet, a more congenial medium by which to gather data. None would dispute, I think, that some excellent documentaries thinking of television have been made and continue to be made. But the dangers seen by Postman and Wells are only too real. Young and old alike, we may be giving too much credence to teachings, worship bands, ministries, and paradoxically books by how emotionally engaged we feel. This faulty reasoning gets a further fillip through the battering that the concept of truth is suffering at the hands of postmodernism. With the disciples of Derrida and Foucault providing an intellectual escape route away from rigorous thinking by asserting that all knowledge is simply one group bullying another into submission, the whole concept of truth has come into disrepute. If the thought that words can have meaning, and that some things are right and some things are wrong, is now something to feel ashamed of, then we are more likely to gravitate towards evaluating by feeling rather than by reasoning. No wonder that there is such an appeal in the charismatic movement or the emerging church. No wonder that musical impact is allowed to cover a multitude of errors and heresies in the pulpit. No wonder that awe-inspiring, dynamic speakers are cherished, irrespective of what they are saying and whether it is actually in the Bible. Even the Bible itself is lost to us and can only address us now if it makes us feel something on terms that we, too, have set. In the hand of some teachers of the emerging church, the Bible is no longer the place of eternal truth and to find it there, but a place to find inspiring stories and source material for mystical experiences to assist us on our personal journeys. This has a number of implications. Firstly, in our effort to build biblical churches, we have to help the children of the entertainment age to actually think. We have to recover for them the Bible and rational discourse where words mean things and where the individual hearer is not free to invent new meanings. We have to wean them off dependence on the TV-based method of accumulating information and habituate them more to the idea of reasoning. Systematic theology and confessional creeds play their part here. Secondly, we may need to educate people out of being passive spectators. Program makers have to fall over themselves to interest and excite us. They suffer the indignity of being switched off or having the channel changed if they fail in their task by leaving us bored. People can come to church with the same mentality. A kind of passivity, where they expect to be entertained, where they look to have their attention grabbed without needing to expend much intellectual energy or effort of their own. The Lord is under no obligation to to grab our attention, to satisfy us as consumers, as if we were picky customers expecting to be entertained by him. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks, it will be opened. Matthew 7, verses 7 to 8. From this, we can quickly glean that if we turn up with an attitude expecting to be entertained and impressed, we will not be doing much finding. This more passive entertain me mentality, which looks to be overcome by the performance, is not how we should come into the Lord's house. The proud will be scattered in the imagination of their hearts. The rich will be sent empty away. We do not come to gatherings of the Lord's people to passively consume. We come to expend effort and energy. We come to love him with heart and soul and strength and mind. Thirdly, we who preach to our congregations or who teach the young must make sure that we're not falling in with the expectations of the entertainment society and the cult of celebrity, and with the general unwillingness to think or even unfamiliarity with the act of actually thinking. Romans 12, verse 2. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. One way of conforming to the world is trying to fit into the television media age by projecting an image. This, of course, has bitten deep in many churches. The preacher projects this successful personality, dresses in the best clothes available, drives the most desirable vehicles. They are witty, forceful, energetic, commanding presences. Of course, only later do we learn that some of them, at least, they were battling addictions, profoundly depressed, or had turned to prostitutes or homosexual practice for an outlet. But while it works, image is to be created and sustained. The temptation is to conform and copy. Humour may have its place in the pulpit, but not by ramming inappropriate, irrelevant, or contrived jokes and anecdotes down the throats of the congregation. Neither, for effect, should we exaggerate what the Lord is doing and fall into the trap of making sweeping assertions and generalisations. Let us be the people the Lord has made us be in the pulpit. Moreover, let us be the same people out of the pulpit as in the pulpit. We profess the love of Christ in the pulpit, then let it be seen in our conversation and lifestyle. Do we speak of the virtue of holiness? Then let us not be guilty of projecting an image, but live out holy lives in our families, amongst the unconverted, and amongst the Lord's people. The media make other people a source of entertainment to us. Let us not try as preachers to live up to that low calling by trying to be entertainers and celebrities. Fourthly, in these considerations, we have to be ready for those whose thinking paradoxically needs straightening out in another direction. Many, I hinted earlier, are actually quite cynical about some aspects of the entertainment society. Whether their take is that the media are controlled by the Jewish lobby, or the secular humanists, or neocons, or left-wing progressives, a lot of people are quite sceptical about Hollywood, the BBC, shallow pop stars and overpaid football players. A lot of people, while at one level happily consuming the products of the entertainment society, are still capable of formulating the thought that they, as consumers, are being manipulated and treated like fools. Bankers with their bonuses and politicians with their expenses currently stand indicted of taking us all for a ride. Such suspicions and contempt can also attach itself to the overpaid stars of the entertainment industry, such as Tiger Woods, and to the media that nurture their image. Unfortunately, the same cynicism and suspicion, in part a reaction against the entertainment society, can also be turned on preachers and the truth we proclaim. Our own personal integrity is vital in restoring credibility here. We must also continue insisting in our ministry that there is a truth to be found which is not the propaganda of a power-crazed denomination out to manipulate people. My next subheading. What sort of people should we be? What sort of people should we be? The assumptions and principles of the entertainment society pull in one direction. The call for sanctification pulls in another. Creatures whose fulfillment and joy derive primarily from the entertainment society are creatures of the world. The Christian is to be forsaking the world. For this is the will of God, your sanctification. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 3. That sanctification is measured by growing Christ-likeness, by obedience, by the fruit of the Spirit, by growing in the grace and the knowledge of the Lord. Our personal fulfillment, emotional wholeness, or experience of pleasure is not what Scripture, the Holy Spirit, or the ministry of the church is seeking directly to promote. The question we ask ourselves and each other must be this: is how I live working positively or negatively towards my sanctification? Is how I live, including my leisure time, working positively or negatively towards my sanctification? We've already seen that the entertainment society has not emerged as a concerted response to glorify God. The opposite is true. It has always had man and his felt, especially emotional needs, at the heart of its project. We therefore proceed with a huge measure of caution, mindful lest some of the matters I've already alluded to begin to assert themselves in our souls. So as we finish, here are some thoughts and perhaps guidelines. You could add many more, I'm sure, as we seek to steer a course through enemy territory that is today's entertainment society. Firstly, a question. Quite a complex one, but hang on in there. Is the entertainment or recreation I am pursuing something which, were I to reveal to a non-Christian participating that I was a Christian, would shock them? If I was using my leisure time, if I was in the company of a non-Christian, and I mentioned to them, and I hope you would, and I hope I would, that I am a believer, I trust in Christ, how would they react? Would it shock them to learn that about you? Am I compromised and directly supporting something or watching something which is wholly or mainly destructive of Christian values, the Christian gospel, and the glory of God? Does it take me into a situation where I'd feel ashamed to evangelize? Would it shock my minister if I explained what I did in my spare time? Note that I said shock and not amuse your minister. The British are renowned for their quaint interests and hobbies, the fascination for which is quite lost on most of us. Collections of all kinds of things fill lofts and attics, garden sheds and spare rooms. Here, let us perhaps celebrate our diversity and quickly move on. Secondly, and related in part to my first point, does the amount of time I spend engaging in these pastimes and entertainments, as well as the enthusiasm with which I pursue them, cause a non-Christian, knowing of my Christian profession, to conclude that the Lord is quite unimportant to me? Am I, especially, not wholly, in the company of non-Christians, am I conveying a message to them that this interest or this pastime or this entertainment is far more important to me than is the Lord and his people and his work? We can allow ourselves some entertainment of the right kind, for sure. But when it is evidently getting the lion's share of our time, energy and enthusiasm, we are dishonouring God. Thirdly, does this form of entertainment and pastime lead me to use, for example, bad language or indulge in covetous thoughts? Does it foster unhealthy attachments to members of the opposite or same sex, and create fantasies or ambitions which are ungodly? Does it arouse discontent in my soul, or begin to fill my every waking thought? If I lose that football match, do I react sullenly and petulantly? Then it may be time to change our pastimes, or spend a little less time there. Here, even the harmless hobbies and quaint collections can assume a wrong dominance. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12. Where ungodly attitudes or hindrances to sanctification are asserting themselves, then an urgent review is needed. Fourthly, in these guidelines that I'm just outlining here, if I am unable to follow my leisure pursuit or choice of entertainment because of the weather or equipment failure or some unexpected family commitment or special church meeting, do I feel resentful and cheated? If I was looking forward to watching that match or being able to sit down at the internet that evening and suddenly you learn there's a church meeting you'd forgotten about and you must go there, do I feel resentful and cheated? Do I carry out the duty or activity with a bad attitude or cheerfully, despite perhaps the disappointment of not being able to go to that football match or attend some performance? Again, the answers to this question will be revealing about the state of our souls and the extent to which the entertainment society may have taken root there. Fifth point in this respect. Am I aware of a pressing need in the life of the church or in my own family, which is being neglected and where I could offer help? If we're neglecting our obvious duties for the sake of some entertainment, then we're being ruled by the worldly priorities of the entertainment society. A sixth point. Am I neglecting the priority of personal communion with God by pursuing this particular activity? In this regard, if we become aware we're backsliding, then we should cease from our leisure activities and give ourselves no rest until we're walking with the Lord again. Indeed, if we're using our entertainments, as many in the world do, as a form of escapism, this is not an appropriate action for a child of God. We should be going to the Lord and to his people to find out more durable and God-honoring solutions rather than turning on the television. Seventhly, and finally in this list of guidelines, though you and I could add many more to them, I'm sure, another question. Is there any direct or indirect spiritual benefit to us or to others from our choice of entertainment or leisure pursuit? Is there any direct or indirect spiritual benefit to our souls or to the souls of others as a result of the choices we make with what we entertain ourselves with or pursue in our leisure time? It's not that everything must be measurable in souls saved, but does, for example, our chosen entertainment lead to opportunities, perhaps, for witness? Evangelism may not be the main reason you indulge in a particular activity or interest, but is there a possibility of it having some evangelistic potential? Some activities can be occasions for deeper reflection when we're away from the imperative of the telephone, email, or other distractions. Walking, for example, can be a time of communion with the Lord and reflection upon the world which may yield some valuable insights. Other activities are helpful in that we can engage in them with other Christians, and this can serve to enhance fellowship and build up mutual trust, understanding, and respect. Family life and church life can be strengthened through some fun and laughter together. If there is something that tones up our mind and body, the benefits in our spiritual life and the work for the Lord may actually be considerable. So there are a few thoughts and a few guidelines. You could add many more, I'm sure, and there's much more that we could consider. So I'm going to conclude now. So this is something of the context in which we are seeking to obey the Lord and conform to his plan for the church. This is the kind of day in which the Lord has seen fit to entrust us with a vision for this great enterprise. Working in an entertainment society, as much that we may feel, is discouraging. But so has every age. We, like every generation of Christians before us, have great promises to sustain us. Let us be alert to the opportunities as well as the dangers. Let us be diligent in self-examination and be careful in our walk with the Lord and each other. Seek the right proportion and choice in our entertainments. Leisure time enjoyed rightly with a clear conscience may make us better workers in the more explicitly spiritual disciplines. We want ultimately all life under the lordship of Christ. just as work and family life, more spiritually entered into, will immeasurably strengthen the church, so will perhaps our pastimes and entertainments, spiritually engaged in, bring perhaps unexpected benefits to the life of the local church.